I'm a double there. It's Free Thought Thursday in the wine cellar.
Brothers is going out of state. Northwest ain't never gonna blow up. No artists out here ever gonna blow up. They're all gonna fucking suck like Jersey does.
I get the flow and I stop when I'm hitting the beat. To get to call my own lock like a Smith with a key. Quit thinking you're so hot like a dick with disease. I'll freeze your whole steez to a frigid degrees. I'll sneeze a rose breeze that can flip a caprice. I breathe and blow weed with no stick or a seed. Pause and I'm blaming at your team. I can't take you serious like Nick Cannon on the screen. My damage and demeanor, it gets in your brain. Then I'm handing you subpoenas like a Renthro James. Shock rap's what I got as I push the limit. Coming back like Pac said he would but didn't. I'm connected to the dollar, we got cheddar in the bush. You're a sweater with a collar, you ain't never in the hood. And I gotta represent it so my city don't trip. But they're scared to go against me like Olympio is.
It takes two words, two joints, two blunts, two blacks.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
Free thought. Conversation.
It's Free Thought Thursday in the wine cellar. Who took my glass?
All right, and recording for Free Thought Thursday, Phoenix Kalita and I both have Samson microphones, though it would be good if we get Phoenix Kalita a vocal condenser microphone. It's an $80 investment. That might not be till like fucking March next year or something, lady.
That might be a minute.
Yeah, so I put up in the social networks Free Thought Thursday, open topics plus news and comment, and I'm just looking for what you think about whatever it is that you want to talk about. The same call in numbers 347-857-3937. And then as I posted that up in the social networks 60 minutes before we did this one of these pre-recorded segments for the program, I threw some stuff up in there, right? Like Jesus Christ, what is this? A link to a what the hell's going on here? An individual, Kendra Childs, was and I mean this was just trending in the social networks. It's a 19-year-old individual that had a 2-year-old child, and last week it came out that she was murdered by a dude because she refused to dance with him and saw a lot of black men. Wait a second, what am I? This is not an actual news report. This is just someone's post.
Was that the one that we covered where she asked him to stop grinding on her? That
no, that's the thing. This is someone named Patrick Perry, and it's their personal whack post on their whack personal page. Yeah, I was looking, I was like, hold up, this is not what I remember reading before. No, the real story, because I was like, wait a second, no, she was murdered by another woman. And yeah, she was, yeah, because her current boyfriend, he had an ex, and the ex murdered her.
Okay.
Which, and I don't know if I'd say misogyny or there, is that that stuff that people call lover's triangle. I took myself way out of the dating world, and I stopped watching television shows that involved it. I just didn't care. So I'm pretty ignorant on this, how this works. Why the fuck would you just go kill him? I thought that was Wisteria Lane shit. Like black people do that shit?
Everybody does that shit. I think that it's... people will blame things when their relationships don't work out. So, you know, it didn't work out and he leaves and she's like, but it couldn't be me. It couldn't be our relationship. It's because this person came in and stole him or took him from me. So there's this idea that if you get rid of the obstacle or the thing that stole your partner will come back, you know. And it's just, it's, there's like that level of ownership, you know, like, but that's my man. He's not allowed to leave for someone else kind of thing. And it's just sad, really. And I think people are quick to blame everything but themselves for the failure of a relationship. It's like, okay, well, did it work out? Can it be saved? Can it not be? Why not? And instead of taking inventory there, it's just, you know, the outside factor, you know. She stole him. Like, well, she didn't steal him. He has autonomy. He's an autonomous human being who left. You know, and the same thing with guys who cheat. Like, you know, she didn't make him cheat. He is an autonomous human being who chose to cheat on you. You know, like,
I think if you were to, like, flip that, like, with it's a woman, she may have been coerced. Like, she may have not wanted to.
There is that. That is a huge factor.
Yeah, like, so, like, if you're thinking, like, well, she cheated on me with her boss at work because she likes a more powerful man, or she was fucking scared and froze up and was raped, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't report because... now we don't all know why. You might be tuning in for the first time here in a program like this, because people are going to be like, you lied. I don't know if you know this, folks. Like, I've definitely been involved, though. I'm one of those folks that's like, we need to get these rape kits done and get these rape kits done. Rape kits are invasive. See if you could, maybe you could find somewhere you could read about it. Or if someone who's been raped is willing to tell you about getting a rape kit done, it's like getting raped again, from what I've heard.
It is.
Yeah, so fucking... because that's a bunch of strangers going exactly where the rapist just was less than an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And just doing procedures, if you will. Yeah, kind of flowing off. Well, not really flowing off topic. It's Free Thought Thursday. It is intended to be tangential. So, yeah, there's that story going on. I don't have much on it other than don't date.
Yeah,
if you're under 30, don't date. Go get a hobby.
I mean, it's important too, because I think there is something to be said about patriarchy and sexism with stories like this that, you know, it's so important for women to not be single. You have to have a man. You have to be in a relationship. You have to get married and have kids and do that. That, you know, women are literally killing other women because their boyfriend cheats on them or leaves them for someone else. And it's like, now you have to go to prison because this man, and he's going to be free and he's going to live his life and do what he wants to do. And you're going to be in fucking prison because you just couldn't be single.
And he just, and really now he has, frankly, he has a funny story to tell. He's like, yo, she liked it so much, dog. She killing hoes over me, bruh.
Exactly.
Like, he's going to be saying that for the next 10 years.
And he's essentially ruined two lives now. One, you know, the family of the victim who was murdered and the family of the woman that killed him because she's going to be in prison. And it's like...
Yeah, three, because, I mean, fuck it. I mean, who's going to raise the kid?
Yeah, who's going to raise the kid? Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe so what's worth killing over isn't just that, that if you're single, you're weird, so you have to be with somebody. But, I mean, these are black people, most likely systemically impoverished in their microcosm of existence. And, he's probably, like, one of the few dudes in that neighborhood or town where, like, he worked his way up to management. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a decent vehicle and pays rent on time.
And pays child support.
Yeah, and pays, and you know, and keeps a decent haircut and he's not hideous. Like, mm-hmm. He was probably, like, in that context, a trophy among the other men of the area. Mm-hmm. Maybe. We're left to speculate.
And it's always important, too, to note that particularly when talking about black women, dating is always harder because black women are the most undesirable among all dating pools, right? You know, people would prefer white women, or they would prefer, you know, Asian women, or they prefer Latinas. But when it comes to black women, a lot of people don't want to respect black women and date black women and love black women. So there's
it's extra pressure, right? Because you already have the pressure as a woman that there's something inferior about you or broken about you if you can't find a partner. And add into the fact that because of European beauty standards, because of racism, you're already the most undesirable partner out there.
Well, they want you to think you're the most undesirable because they always want somewhere where they can, you know, when it's quote unquote a dry month, there's somewhere that I know I can apply very little effort and put my genitals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think just from white people saying that to black women, that's a lie, because they need to keep your self-esteem down. They need you to think that you're of low value so that they always know they can go there when things are getting boring.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Jesus Christ, this was some years ago. I was watching that old program, Family Guy, and I think I forgot what the whole scene was, but Peter said to the daughter Meg, and like her character is supposed to be like really unwanted and ugly and whatnot, and he was like, "You're what we call a practice girl."
Oh, yeah.
And that's how the society wants black women and girls to be. You're a practice girl. Yeah. All right, pause that.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Thursday, September 15th, 2016. First up, Big Gay News from North Carolina. NCAA moving 7 championship events out of North Carolina. ESPN reports that the NCAA will move 7 championship events this academic year from the state of North Carolina, including the first and second rounds of the 2017 NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, because of the state's controversial HB2 law. The decision was made Monday night by the NCAA's Board of Governors, and comes shortly after the decision of the NBA to move February's All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans. The 7 events involve men's and women's soccer, men's basketball, women's golf, men's and women's tennis, women's lacrosse, and baseball. According to an NCAA statement, the board's decision was based on a number of deciding factors, including the fact that the North Carolina law, quote, invalidated any local law that treats sexual orientation as a protected class, or has a purpose to prevent discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender individuals. Next up, 12-year-old Mexican boy disrupts parade of anti-gay protesters. Out reports that in a solitary show of courage over the weekend, a young Mexican boy stood in the middle of a street with his arms outspread trying to stop a pro-family march protesting same-sex marriage. Journalist Manuel Rodriguez captured an image of the boy as he stood in the middle of the street, blocking the cars leading a protest march and rally against marriage equality, and the photograph has since gone viral on the internet. Rodriguez said that he thought that the boy was simply playing in the street, but upon speaking with him, the child told him, quote, "I have an uncle who is gay, and I hate the hatred." Next up, lawyer for gay police chief says she was fired illegally. ABC News reports that the lawyer for a fired gay police chief says she should get her job back because the South Carolina town of Lata didn't follow the law. Melissa Burnett, the attorney for Crystal Moore, said that Moore's termination is invalid because the Lata town council did not vote on the issue in open session last week, although town administrator and councilman Jarrett Taylor said that he had told other council members of his plans to fire Moore and that the majority of them approved. Taylor asserts that Moore's dismissal was due to her not performing her job correctly, but Burnett says that Moore's firing was due to retaliation for her getting an outside agency to investigate a complaint about sexual harassment. For our last story, South Africa bars anti-gay U.S. pastor Steve Anderson. The BBC reports that South Africa has barred controversial U.S. pastor Steven Anderson from visiting the country because of his critical remarks about homosexuality. The Home Affairs Minister refused to issue a visa to Anderson, saying that the constitution of the country prohibits hate speech, and that he had, quote, identified Steven Anderson as an undesirable person to travel to South Africa. The trip by the pastor, who has openly said that homosexuality should be punished by death, was opposed by many in the country, and 2 separate petitions organized by GLBT and human rights activists garnered over 60,000 signatures calling for it to be canceled. That's it for today. Thanks to Linda Raines for compiling the stories. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
I'll sing you some Britney Spears. Oops, I did it again. Down on your... Oh, this makes me sad.
I played with your heart, got lost in the game.
All right, Free Thought Thursday in the Wine Cellar. Phoenix Kalita reading in the shade. William J. Jackson, socialdissonance.wordpress.com, winecellarmedia.com, Get Black. All right, you know what in the holy heck darn else may very well be going on? Had that that old classic thread on corporal punishment.
We might have to redo that entire segment.
Why?
Because I'm actually reading about it now, and they think it was a guy who shot her.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's recording now. Go for it.
Because while we were talking about it, I was like, let me actually Google this. So what I'm gathering right now, the reason they thought it was the girlfriend and the ex-girlfriend initially is because she was leaving threats on social media for this young woman.
Ah.
However, a suspect who saw the drive-by happen described the suspect as a black male with a shaved head. But there were multiple people in the car, so the ex-girlfriend might have still been involved. And she was only 19, too. Damn.
Yeah.
Baby. I've reached that point in my life where 19-year-olds are babies now. Like, just, like, they're kids, man. They're kids.
Oh, they are. I mean, because what, fucking... I mean, we're already in our mid-30s, and 19 twice is only 38. Like, we're almost double and that age.
Actually, now that I'm reading all these social media posts, I'm actually now concerned that they're flat-out saying it was the girlfriend when an eyewitness said it was a black dude with a gun. Not that she couldn't have been involved, but... You know, okay.
Yeah, all that. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't really know what that's why I looked at that story and I was like, it just happens to be Free Thought Thursday, so we can just riff about that, because it's not really like, it's not being reported professionally. There is no investigative journalism going on with this one. Like, this is like a neighborhood story.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of like, oh, homegirl died. Yeah, I think one of them niggas killed her. Damn.
Because let's see, on social media, the ex said, my plan is to plot for a year and I'm going to start killing people. Like, bitch, I don't give a fuck about you. I'll real life kill you. Like, you know, saying stuff like that. But then some guy was in the car. So maybe she recruited someone, but this will be interesting.
Oof, so we should follow it.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Yep. All right. That's happening. Jesus Christ, winecellarmedia.com, classic thread, corporal punishment, and white feminists want black men raped. This is one of those people that, and I mean, it's logical, you know, you don't want to go by your real name in social media, but she had her real pictures up so you can see her, and if you're a black man, avoid her because she wants you to be raped because she's a white supremacist. And at this point in time, she went by Kalyani Moloch in the social networks, and she wanted Adrian Peterson, the football that the football guy that beat the kid, raped. And it's an old... social media thread. Well, that thing, that doesn't look like that loaded correctly. Like how the internet just gets goofy sometimes.
Mm. Saying, you've used me enough today, fuck off.
Jesus Christ, it's 8:40 a.m.
Well, it's, you know.
We're essentially always logged in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, when are we not logged in? And so, yeah, this was back in September 15th, 2014, I had made a social networking post, and I was like, so this Adrian Peterson business, I don't know if I come across flippant about it. My biological mother used timeouts and a stern talking to when I was a young warthog, and I never thought that hitting kids was useful or logical. And growing up, I actually found it quite foolish and at times just plain creepy. It just seemed to me that it taught them to do a better job at not getting caught than teaching them that what they did was destructive, apathetic, irresponsible, or anti-pragmatic. I'm not wedded to my first thought on this, yet I'm still on my first thought. It's that when I see this story blowing up off the top of my head, I think it's just that bad news with black NFL players is hot right now because of an abusing ass Ray Rice and Mr. Respectability politics on ESPN. We know why it's a public conversation in popular culture, but for folks that regularly interact with me, know that we talk about this stuff, whether it's clickbait or not. I also think that before those with the general social power want to jump on black folks with their own offspring doing what I strongly disagree with, maybe stop their brethren with the same and more social power from putting bullets in black kids first. Stop trying to chaperone our dance floor while your party has a spiked punch bowl and the security is part of the riot. What? Damn. Well, I don't know why you wrote that.
Why I wrote that.
Damn, let me go at that again. I also think that before those with the general social power want to jump on black folks with their own offspring doing what I strongly disagree with, maybe stop their brethren with the same and more social power from putting bullets in black kids first. Stop trying to chaperone our dance floor while your party has a spiked punch bowl and the security is part of the riot.
Well, you are also a professional shit talker. That's what we do.
Jesus Christ. Yep, and you could check that thread out and see as things ensue. And I could tell that's one of those ones where I wanted to start booting people from the thread because you could tell folks were deleting comments. And it makes the thread look weird because then you have responses to comments that are not there.
Right.
And it looks strange.
And also, it's a little bit annoying, too. Like, if you fucking... Don't fucking say it.
Yeah!
Like, just don't fucking say it, then. Like, just fucking leave it there. I don't know. I mean, the internet is forever. You should always assume someone has a screen cap of whatever you said.
But yep.
Also, like, if you're wrong, then just fucking say you're wrong. Don't delete your shit. You know? Like, the internet is forever, which also means you have forever to stop, pause, reread, rethink,
yeah,
marinate, and come back and be like, you know what? Maybe I fucked up on that one. Like, that's also an option. Just leave your fucking comments up.
Why do folks think I strut in with so much confidence? Because I know that whatever screenshots anyone does have about me, I'll be like, yeah, I said that shit. like, thanks for reposting it. Tag me. That's a good one.
Tag me.
That's awesome. I like that one. I forgot I said that. That's the dope shit. You kept the classics. You could, you like, print that one out and put it in your fucking photo album. You'll scrapbook my shit. Nigga, I like my posts. I like what I have to... My posts, my comments, I like that shit. Hell, anything I said that are in any of those little punk-ass closed groups I got kicked out of, I like that shit too, nigga. Man, Femo Rant Space, I like that shit.
We be getting kicked out of so many groups.
Yeah.
Ooh. We do.
Yeah. And that's always when the groups go downhill, once they lose the cool niggas. Once you lose your Negrotarians, your group goes to shit. It's never as awesome without us. Let me stab this.
In one of Stephen Postis's Pearls Before Swine comic strips, his character Rat develops a smartphone app that I want. As Rat explains it, whenever your bank charges you some stupid fee for something, you just tap this little button here. Oh, ask another character, does the app file a complaint? No, says Rat. It summons a herd of bunnies that parachute in and eat the bank's CEO. Now that's a useful app. However, I'd also want it to sick the bunnies on today's airline executives, for their fees have become stupider than bank assessments. For example, airlines even charge you a fee for calling to buy a ticket from them. Also, while the price of jet fuel has plummeted, they're still stinging customers with a fuel surcharge fee that adds up to a totally unwarranted multi-billion-dollar corporate windfall, siphoned right out of our pockets. How do they get away with such brazen robbery? By colluding with each other to prevent customers from having any real choice, and by regularly doling out campaign donations to keep Congress critters from interfering with their monopolistic gamesmanship. Thanks to a frenzy of mega mergers, only four airline giants, American, Delta, Southwest, and United, now control 80% of all airplane seats. And most of our airports are dominated by only one of the big four, leaving flyers at their mercy. By dividing up the market, colluding on fares and fees, and effectively bribing Congress, airlines hauled off a record $33 billion in profit last year, an increase of nearly 90% over the previous year. This is Jim Hightower saying, but hey, they say they're going to share that with us. How? By handing out a little bag of snacks to each of us passengers. Perfect. They gouge billions out of our wallets, then try to placate us with peanuts. It's time to call in the bunnies.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, winecellarmedia.com, Phoenix Kaleeder, Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaleeder. We got this from Fallon Matthew. FallonKitty.com posted this from The Guardian, and it's a piece about, titled Hipsters and Artists are Gentrifying Foot Soldiers of Capitalism. I think it's good to put "and artists." Put something other than just white kids, because it's black people and other folks of color with class privilege that are also part of the gentrification. I think, like one person actually, they didn't admit to it. They just publicly posted that they realized it. Like, I think when you use the word admit, it's like somebody saying, like, they did something devious and they knew they were doing something devious the whole time. It's like, nah, this was just a spoiled brat that happened to be black and had realized she was part of gentrification. So, going into this, this is on The Guardian by, who the fuck is the fucker that wrote this? Stephen
Pritchard.
Damn, that's a white ass name. All right,
Mr. Pritchard.
Right, where the fuck? What movie is that from?
Probably something British.
Mr. Pritchard. I think it might actually be an Adam Sandler joint. All right, the hipster capitalist is the opening quote. So said Matt Hancock. Theresa May's new minister for digital and culture, all right, who replaced Ed Vasey in July this year. A standout soundbite from Hancock's buzzword-laden keynote speech delivered last Friday at the Creative Industries Federation meet-and-greet event for culture's great and good at the British Film Institute. Many creative industries leaders lapped up his speech, which, as well as lauding micro-enterprising hipsters, also depicted James Bond delivering a post-Brexit global calling card, the UK cultural capital, from his Aston Martin. They are saying a whole bunch of shit that I don't know about. Creative Industries Federation... who the fuck? Matt Hancock? Aston Martin?
Aston Martin is the car that James Bond drives.
Why does it look like a name? Like, it looks like a white person's name that you might confuse with a black person. Like, you see it and you're like, oh, he's probably black. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, it's like Donovan. Like, niggas that don't know, like, Irish names well, we're just like, Donovan. That's a nigga, right? Like, Donovan, that sounds like a tall, light-skinned nigga. Like, that's what that sounds like.
A quarterback named Donovan McNabb, who's black.
Word?
Yeah.
Oh, good. So, like, one of the most famous ones, we got him.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
That was a petty-ass response.
Oh, man. Let me just, I'm going to continue forward. Just going to check these notifications.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, like, with hipsters, like, fuck yeah, they're pro-capitalism because they have all this, like, little fucking microbrewery, handmade chocolate, like, all this shit. And it's, not only do they make these things, they expect to be compensated for them, right? Like, fuck those fucking child slaves in Africa who, you know, dig up the cocoa.
Yeah.
You know, fuck them. But I took that cocoa powder and made it into a chocolate bar, and that chocolate bar is going to be $9 because I value my labor. And it's like, could you value our labor too, though?
Yeah, the only reason why you had time to do that shit was because of money left over from your parents being involved in capitalism and their parents, and where you could trace a whole lot of that back to the Homestead Act.
Yeah.
You trace a whole lot of that shit. Without the Homestead Act, nigga, you'd be sitting next to me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just something, and that's really frustrating. And, you know, all of a sudden, you're in a neighborhood, and all these people come here, and they live here, and they jack up the rent, and you can't afford to stay in your neighborhood. They start offering services that you can't afford to buy, and it's like, you have to move, because you just can't afford to live there. And I'm like, all right, then. And what kills me is they do it under the guise of, like, we're just nice, and we're not, like, the capitalists in suits, right? We're the nice guys because, like, we'll shake your hand and talk to you, and we live in your neighborhood. It's not like we live in, you know, the rich suburb where you can't afford to go. We don't live in a gated community. We live with you, so we're nice like you. And it's like, but you're still fucking...
And that's why I think really, like, you know, this fucking phrase, nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, niggas like me that have the privilege to constantly be paying attention to this shit and seeing it as it happens, like, go to the niggas in the hood and be like, if you don't want to see your friends and family lose their houses and get pushed out of here, you see where this white family is moving in right now, and you see the U-Haul truck moving in, soon as night falls, fuck that house up and scare them away.
Yep.
Fuck it up. We got bricks, we got rocks, bash those fucking windows. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what, just to throw them off, make sure you get a pair of gloves and get a piece of paper and write on it, you niggers better stay out of here, and tape that to one of the rocks and throw it through the fucking window.
Awesome.
Yeah, just to throw them off, just to confuse them, you know, like, you fucking spicks, get the fuck out of my neighborhood, fucking Japs.
Fucking Japs.
Continuing forward with this piece by this British motherfucker, cultural capital has always been Britain's soft power weapon of choice, the perfect accompaniment to let's politely say a proudly robust heritage of rampant jingoism that has long served to justify our lust for colonialism and imperialism in all its forms. Hancock recognizes this, and the fact that the hipster epitomizes both the old and the new, a perfectly preened vision of the 21st century conservatism. Good writing. The hipster may be a capitalist, although aren't we all nowadays? Because my money doesn't make money. That's what the capitalist does. Their money makes money. The hipster is also ethical, sustainable, and highly mobile. Retro, beautifully reconditioned fixed wheel bikes with 70s steel frames and state-of-the-art aero wheels are their trusty steeds.
That's kind of funny.
With carefully coiffed beards and retro haircuts, they dwell in craft beer drinking dens, pop-up shops, tattoo parlors, and restaurants selling cereal. Remember that shit? They're like,
I remember that.
Like, what, $6 and $7 bowls of cereal? Get the fuck out of here. Again, see, like, I'm telling y'all, if you're in a black neighborhood and you see a cereal shop pop up, just get a bunch of rocks, write "go home niggers," get a cross to set on fire in front of it, and bash that motherfucker out and leave him confused and make him leave. And take some cereal while you're at it, nigga. Cereal's awesome. They continue on. So the hipster is also very carefully considered. Everything stylized, everything thought through. Again, but that only comes with privilege. That's if you're privileged with the time to do that. Actually, I should say privilege because it's an unearned advantage. Mm-hmm. So if you have the unearned advantage to have the time to do that, because you don't have to be at work 55 hours a week to make rent and bills. You don't have to be at work 60 hours a week and then plus raising child and taking care of household and then try to have 45 minutes set aside for some fucking sit down and hobby for a moment. Which your hobby, since you have so little energy, your hobby is just watching one episode of one show on Netflix. And then back to work. So, like, it's not that these hipsters are so careful and focused. It's just that they have the time to be. Which they don't, and it's not time that they got themselves. It's time that was given to them by the crony capitalistic white supremacist social construct. Nigga. Continuing on.
Got to the nigga at the end.
A recent visit to my newly opened traditional barber gave an insight into the world of the hipster. The 30-something owner crafted each haircut as a unique experience. So what? Did he Jack Nicholson... I keep wanting to say Something's Gotta Give, and that's the wrong movie. What the fuck is the name of that Jack Nicholson movie where he's OCD? As good as it gets. So fucking every time he used the clippers, he throws them away and starts with a new pair of clippers. You get a really unique experience. They fucking throw away the barber chair after every 5 customers and get a new barber chair out the back. Get the fuck out of here.
Hipsters are funny.
Reclaimed barbering implements and blades hung on hidden magnetic pads beneath salvage yard beams. Faux hunting lodge paneling was lit by wireless mood lighting. Customers sat on re-engineered 1920s barbering chairs. So they basically want shit looking like it looked during Jim Crow while they gentrify you out. Hidden status. So these motherfuckers actually are making America great again. They're taking their country back. And they're taking their, and while they're taking their country back, they're voting Clinton. All right, neoliberalism and Democrats are bringing it back, not Republicans. All right, because Republicans are too incompetent. Democrats are skilled, refined white supremacists. All right, Republicans are just the fucking belligerent uncle that you keep hearing about at Thanksgiving. You know, while the Democrat is the strategic one,
I gotta point out with that whole like analogy where they're like, oh, it's just like your drunk racist uncle who just says stuff. I gotta like, that uncle is related to someone. That's why he's at your fucking table. What is going on with your fucking family that they invite his ass over at all? Like,
right? They're all the same Congress. They're all the Senate. They're all the State House.
He's your uncle, so that's one of your parents' siblings. The fuck is wrong with your family that they raise someone like that?
Yeah, and you were raised in the same household. I don't think you escaped all those ideas. You just know how to be polite. You don't call them niggers. You call them super predators.
Probably.
Yeah, you don't say they're fucked up and they're just killers. You say they have no empathy. These are all the words of the queen white feminist. Continuing. I asked the hipster owner and his beard-nurturing hipster customer, a tattooist from across the road, how they describe themselves. Oh, shit. You ready? They said socialists.
Artisanal mayonnaise?
Socialists.
They're not fucking... I will throw this microphone...
It is the cheap one. You may throw the cheap microphone.
An artisanal mayonnaise jar.
They describe themselves as socialists, they replied. And they quickly added to that they were not looking, quote, to build empires. No, because you're already part of one. You actually can't build an empire. It will be like over fucking like 500 more years before anybody could think about building another empire. Like, from the ground up. Not gonna happen. And they also, quote, want to make a living. end quote. They had both left safe jobs working for the state and local government, respectively. And he said, this led me to wonder about suggestions that the hipster may represent some form of reincarnated frontiersman, woman, or pioneer. In many ways, I think they do. Their styling certainly harks back to the mid to late 19th century, to the British colonialist in Western frontiers. These people want to earn a reasonable living independently by crafting and creating. They, like the original pioneers, are explorers and artists, and they are capitalists. No, I think the writer is wrong because, well, first off, the original pioneers, the original invaders were not, they were not taking any risk because they always had their motherland to back them up and save them. So there was no risk there. And these folks, he's talking to two males, so they have patriarchy to save them. They're white males, they have white supremacy to save them. And now, this is where I'm left to speculate. They come from families. They have their families and wealth from the Homestead Act to save them. They're not actually taking any real risk. Mm-hmm. And they're also not creating. Beer already exists. You're taking a recipe that someone else already came up with before the Bible, and you're just redoing it. You're not actually creating anything.
I think that there's, you know, something to be said about the idea of what creating looks like or what pioneering looks like, because, like, oh, the pioneers, they, you know, set out across the country and didn't know where they were going to end up, and they took that risk, and it's like, so they had to travel. Traveling shouldn't be the risk, because once they got wherever the fuck they were going, they set up a settlement just like they had back home.
And this is also
replicating.
This is before they killed so many of the indigenous folks that were already here. Mm-hmm. So they had help, nigga.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like how you had help when you worked at that government place and you were a mediocre white man, there were black people helping that kept shit up afloat, and some white women that worked hard and kept shit up afloat while you slacked off thinking about growing a beard and doing tattoos.
Exactly, exactly.
And do you just freehand freestyle tattoos off the top of your head, or do you look at a picture and copy it? You don't. Create. Did you make your tattoo gun from scratch? No. Oh, you went and purchased it with money that you got from your government job from my tax dollar? Oh, that's what you did. I created your tattoo shop with my labor.
Yep. Yeah, they really think that everything they do is just innovative and creative. Everything.
Full voice.
It's the morning.
Here, I'll show you your decibels.
What?
Ooh, let's zoom in.
You're making fun of my decibels.
Yeah, see, look at them. Look at how low they are.
Don't make fun of my decibels. You stop it, Mr. Man.
All right. Continuing on, unlike the colonizing pioneer of the past, however, the hipster is postmodern, post-industrial, and post-Fordist. It is a little wonder.
If they're post-Fordist, why do they all look the same?
Yeah, again, and it goes back to that movie SLC Punk. You think you look unique, but you're wearing a uniform. Post-Fordist. It is little wonder, then, that Hancock fetishizes the hipster as both an ideal actor in his post-Brexit creative industries fantasy and an exemplar of small-scale micro-enterprise, a capitalist. An article in the Evening Standard suggests that the minister's comments might surprise many hipsters who pride themselves in breaking away from the mainstream economy with independent-minded and ethical ideas and work practices, end quote. But isn't this an exact description of the kind of small-scale capitalist innovation that Hancock in... Woo! I don't know that word. Envisages? The fuck is that? What the hell is an envisage? Sounds like a shitty accessory to a suit.
And just swap it out. Swap it out for envisions.
envisions. So it's not like, Benson, fetch my envisage. Fetch my envisage.
It's so much harder to podcast looking at your face when you do shit like that.
And so Incock fetched the envisage as driving the core of Britain's much hoped for creative industries revolution. It's a coded form of cultural imperialism.
You know, the last time they did this, we ended up with Samuel Slater coming over here with blueprints for factories. That's what happened last time.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and what would these hipsters, like, I'm pretty sure that hipster barber man wouldn't mind his shop, you know, becoming corporate and having, like, 800 locations across the rotten fruited plain.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even if they don't, if they're socialists, as they say, are their services accessible to the average citizen? Like, can poor people afford to go there and to the barbershop?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, if it was socialist, they would set up a small sort of shadow government, because the one that we have is brought out and capitalist. They would set up some sort of small shadow government where, like, everybody in that community, right, like within 20 miles, like, all agrees to pay $5 in monthly to the haircut tax. And then everyone kind of gets like a voucher to come in once a week and get their hair cut. And they just come in and just get their hair cut, and nothing exchanges hands. And then it just comes out of that pot that pays the electric bill and whatnot, and pays for that guy to have some sort of place to live when he leaves the barbershop. Then it would be socialist, it would be socialized, but I'm pretty sure that's not how he runs it. I'm quite sure that he charges per haircut and gleefully takes tips.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure he does not socialize those tips with the community.
Oh, but he shops in the community at his little, you know, hipster friends' places, so that counts, right?
Does he? I mean, and that's... that's
or does he?
Because that's where he's left to speculate. Like, let's say that he has things that we have in this apartment right here. Mm-hmm. So, dinner table. Did he go to the local dinner table hipster store and buy a dinner table? Did he go to the local hipster lamp store and buy 5 lamps and extra shades? Did he go to the local hipster flat screen television place? We're not going to get supporters telling them we have a flat screen. Did he go to the local hipster flat screen television store and purchase that? Did he get over 300 DVDs from the local hipster DVD supplier? Did he get the fucking, oh my goodness, we have a lot of shit. But
yeah, well, that was the socialized Hobby Lobby tax. Or no, the Hobby Lobby...
Venus Collider, she...
I
acquired donations.
Reappropriated manufactured goods.
She made her own Supreme Court decision. I mean, yeah, so like, I mean, is that even an option, right? Like, is there, like, I'm quite sure he uses electricity at his place. Is there a local hipster electricity providing company? Are there hipsters running water into his place? Toothpaste? Is he getting hipster homemade toothpaste? Or when I walk in there, is it Crest that he got from Target? Is it Colgate that he got from Walmart? Get the fuck out of here with that shit. All right? Does he drive a car? Does he get his gas from the local hipster gas that they fucking got from fucking eating beans and farting into the tank? Like really? And were they fucking free-range, locally grown, organic, gluten-free beans? Get the fuck out of here. Like, he's not actually doing that. And for the most part, we don't have the option to do that. We are socialist as much as we're allowed to be in globalized capitalism. Ma'am.
All right, fine. Fine, just be anti-hipster. See if I can.
Oh, man. They continue in this piece. It is the establishment that now sees the hipster as the embodiment of autonomous, small-scale capitalist expansionism. But it is not just the hipster cast in this role. Artists are the neoliberal state's troops. Artists make the first move into post-industrial, post-welfare state wastelands like brownfield sites, and council housing estates, and they sow the seeds of cultural capital. They attract hipsters before eventually being displaced by them and their new middle-class neighbors. Both the artist and some of the hipsters, the ones who haven't settled yet, will move on, exploring, breaking away again, developing new potential sites for capital investment, and so on. The cycle of gentrification starts over again. They do not break away, they are forced out. I'm thinking, when I'm thinking artists, I'm thinking like we did have a bit of a hip-hop culture out there in Hilltop Tacoma, or like those folks out in Brooklyn, they had a hip-hop culture and they had graffiti art, they had murals painted up and whatnot, and they were forced out because the hipsters came along and they said, oh, what brilliance, I must be near this.
Yep.
I must be around this. And then
find a way to profit off of this.
Yep. And then once you're there, the real art of it fades. You mimic it for about a decade and a half. But while you're mimicking it, we're coming up with more real shit in whatever place that you forced us to be in. And then our real shit bubbles up from the ground up. And you're like, I must be near that.
Yeah, and I think the thing, too, is that all they can do is mimic it because they can't actually live it. When people are doing graffiti or writing or making music, they are talking about their lived experiences of that area and what it was like to be in that area at that time. When you start having hipsters come in and they gentrify shit, the area is not the same. You literally cannot have the same lived experiences in a gentrified neighborhood than you had 10 years before white people started taking over. Like, you couldn't create the same exact art if you wanted to, because they ruined the source of the art.
Yeah. And also, you just made me think of something I'd like to post in social media. It'll never happen again.
Yeah.
It'll never happen again. Blues, funk, rock and roll, break dancing, not braids in and of themselves, but different styles of braids, zigzags and all that stuff.
The Harlem Renaissance.
Yeah, Harlem Renaissance. I would even say the mid-90s gangster rap renaissance, if you will. You were the first person who told me that was a renaissance 2.5 years ago, and I was like, holy shit, it was. These things will never happen again, and a big part of it is the globalization of our how we connect digitally online, because one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to go share it with other black people online publicly, where white people can see it and jack it immediately. Mm-hmm. We will never be able to sort of like foster and nurture something before white people steal it and destroy it. It will never happen again. Black creativity is dead. So enjoy the classics and appreciate that they ever happened at all.
Yep.
The Wine Cellar, uplifting programming.
But we're post-racial.
In that aspect, we are. Shit. Hell yeah. And I think, Free Thought Thursdays are good, because what folks don't know, this is Phoenix and I offline.
Yeah, like this is what we do.
Yeah, this is us, Boston baked beans. Dark chocolate.
You ate all the fucking brownies, asshole.
Yes, I did. In one setting.
You're a jerk face.
Like, I get a glass of milk. I grab an episode that I recorded and I start editing it. And on another screen, I put on Desperate Housewives and I start dipping the brownies in the milk and consuming.
You ate all my brownies.
We have fruit and ice cream. You want some fruity ice cream? You want some authentic strawberry ice cream?
No.
Ma'am?
No.
We have a, you know, we can run the chocolate through the cheese grater and grate it into the ice cream.
No.
You want grated chocolate ice cream?
No.
I want brownies. Do you hate ice cream?
I want brownies.
You want brownies? Nigga, let's go get some brownies. Let's turn
they
the
show
off.
They don't have anymore. I didn't see him last time I was there.
He's scared. All right, she's scared to go get more brownies.
What the hell? Niggas are working.
Niggas are shook sometimes. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
This has gone, I think they call it off the rails.
It started off the rails. Now it's like in the pasture.
WineCellarMedia.com.
It's Free Thought Thursday in the Wine Cellar.
Plotting on the Protestant white man. That's what happens when the Jews and the niggas get together. The white man will never have rights again. Plotting on the Protestant white man. Jesus.
Father Teresa just yelled at me to make him a sandwich.
All right, so Dwayne Carter, a rapping individual, which he's one of those rappers where, like, why do people want him to talk? Like, he's much better at rapping than talking. As soon as he starts talking, like, it's beyond monotone. He's one of those people who, he only pushes just enough air out of his lungs to make his vocal cords rumble to talk.
I just like the fact you say his actual name and not the name everyone knows him by.
I think it's more humanizing when you do that first, right? Like before I tell you he's Tech Nine, I tell you Aaron Yates. You know, before I tell you he's MC8, I tell you he's Aaron Tyler. Before I tell you he's Redman, I say he's Reggie Noble. You know, it's more like, because people hear the rap name first, same thing, it's like, oh, just fuck rapper. It's like, well, here, let me give you a name, right? Like, this was a human being who was born and their mother held him up and said, you will be Reginald Noble. And I think that's how his mother talked.
His mother talks that way.
That's how, yes, like a young person was born in Compton, California, and mother held him up and said, Eric Wright.
Really, that's how...
My son.
That's how they talk in
Eric
Compton.
Eric Wright.
That's how they talk in Compton.
Yes.
I...
At least that generation that was having kids in the late 60s and early 70s.
That's how they talked in the 70s in Compton.
Yeah, late 60s, early 70s. That is how that particular generation of folks that was having kids, that's how they spoke. It's how they said words.
I'm going to ask Ricky's mom about that.
And she's going to say, why is this peasant speaking to me, Richard? Is this one of your Negro friends? That's... All right, so fucking, yes, Dwayne Carter.
A.K.A.
Wheezy F. Baby was on a program... with a person whose name is Skip Bayless on the television. I don't know what channel. I don't know what the hell this is. But they're talking about Colin Kaepernick. What the fuck? How the fuck do you pronounce his name?
Kaepernick.
He needs to get a normal name. Like Malid... Shahaz, but you know, Umar.
Shabazz.
Fuck yeah, Umar Shabazz Nasheed. You gonna get that school up and running any day now, but I tell you what. Alright, so again, it annoys me that they want Lil Wayne to talk when he really should just be rapping. Alright, so let's gun it in. I haven't seen this yet, so this is like, and I think Phoenix Cleater, you've already seen some of it.
Yes.
All right. So I'm not familiar with it at all. So this is my real reaction.
What's your reaction to Kaepernick's protests?
That's
going right back again to this man. It's a man and his decisions, man. Respect the man and his decision. That's all I can do. I have no opinion on it because...
All right, so no opinion and I respect the man's decisions. That's how we're starting out here.
Mm-hmm. The things that I may have... I'm not into it enough to even give an opinion. So when he did it, I really didn't even know what. Somebody had to tell me why he was doing it. That's how much I didn't know what was.
Like, he sounds like he just finished ejaculating and smoking a joint at the same time. And he's just like, I really have no idea what to do. I am entirely too relaxed. Can somebody just give me a slice of pizza and light a pumpkin spice candle and, like, you know, throw on like a romantic comedy or something. I'm gonna chill out here, man. Like, excuse me, sir, can you recline my chair for me? I am Dwayne Carter. Like, that's what it sounds like to me.
Going on. And I kind of still don't, so.
So apparently your impression was spot on.
Jesus Christ.
Kneeling because of the Black Lives Matter thing and because of and all that wave or whatever, that whole wave just went by me too fast for me even try to even give an opinion. So I just was like, oh, okay. That's what's happening. So,
and I, again, like, part of that is, like, Wayne's a career guy for a long time. And he probably, I mean, for the most part, I'm betting he just works and has fun. And you know, he's about my age. But he was a career guy before social media. And he's kind of old school. Like, he comes from the days of the, I'm gonna let you hear my demo tape. And then you give me a rap career, and then I bust my ass to keep it as long as possible. And I like how people like to scream 5 minutes of fame. Well, this is 2016. This is year 20 for him. Like, he's been at it for 2 decades. Where's your favorite, though?
Drake will be relevant in years from now.
What year did... What year did Drake crack off? What, 2008, 9, 10? I don't even know when.
Maybe.
Yeah, probably like 2008 or 9, maybe.
Probably.
Yeah, around that. Like, basically around the time that Lil Wayne and Eminem started collaborating at first. Around that time. So what we're basically saying is, 2009, that in 2029, Drake will be relevant enough that he's being interviewed on a sports show about his opinion on socio-political issues.
Yeah. It could happen.
Like, see, so like I don't just respect Wayne for like his past work, particularly Wayne's rhymes from 1996 to 2007. After 2007, he started to lose me. But like 1996 to 2007, I really respect the shit out of his rhymes and like all that work he did, his stage performances and all that shit. You know, but like I also just respect that he works hard enough that he's still at it. His name is still up there. So, you know, keep saying 5 minutes of fame all you want to. Hell, where the hell's Snoop Dogg gone? Snoop Dogg's still around. He's been at it since his demo tape is from early 1991. And then he got with Dre late 1991 for Deep Cover. So, you know what? You add on 5 years to Wayne shit. Snoop's 25 years in. Right? Like, there are people who are saying that someone's going to have 5 minutes of fame who are younger than Snoop's career.
Damn.
Yeah.
Which, just total side note, something that makes me laugh about that is how there's the image in a lot of, you know, with a lot of musicians that like, oh, we just party and we live the good life, but they're working really hard to make it look like they're not working.
Yeah.
And that is, you remember Fiona Apple from back when? That Criminal song?
Nah, don't.
Oh, yeah, I like that song. But I was also a nerd, and I used to watch that pop-up video on VH1.
And that was it gave you, like, factoids?
Yeah, that was one of the random factoids, because the video, the entire video was basically, like, the next day after a huge house party kind of thing.
Hmm.
And they were like, they spent so much time being so busy pretending to be partiers, they didn't actually have an after video rap party because they were too tired. And I was like, huh, I appreciate that.
It's yeah. Kinda,
yeah. Yeah. You gotta work hard to make it look like you're not working.
Right. This is how we tangent.
Mm-hmm. You're a deep thinker in these issues. So step back from all of it. I know this is a very broad question, but where are we in the United States of America in race relations and what you see from day to day in your life?
Skip, they wouldn't want to ask me that. They wouldn't want my answer to represent it because God knows I have been nothing but blessed. My whole path, these 33 years have been nothing.
I'm just cutting in to say there's no such thing as blessed. Nigga, your ass went to work. Your motherfucking ass went to work. All right.
But a blessing, I have never, and never is a strong word, I've never dealt with racism, and I'm glad I didn't.
Yes, you did. That's why you had to get a house in Miami, because racism is why they let Louisiana go to shit where your original home was. So we actually did deal with racism. It's just that, and that's where, and a lot of people, like, I'm not angry at ignorance. He's an ignorant-ass boy from a low-income area of systemic poverty that busted his ass to get out, and he's trying to enjoy the only life he has. Every single black person does not need to be your philosopher. All right? So I don't get angry with ignorance in the actual definition of the word. All right.
I have to. And I don't know if it's because of my blessings. I don't know if it's, but it is my reality. So I would have to say, not only did I thought it was over, I still believe it's over, but obviously it isn't.
So you've never experienced any...
Damn, so this sounds different than the headline I saw. He said... Wait, let's run that back just a couple seconds. Let's get exactly what he said here.
I'd have to say, not only did I thought it was over, I still believe it's over, but obviously, it isn't.
He's saying, I believe it's over. That's more saying, I want racism to be over to the point of where I just want to believe it, but obviously, it isn't. Now, I bet if I go scrolling through my news feed, I'm going to see a whole bunch of y'all niggas like, Lil Wayne ignorant. He think racism just over. He just said, obviously, it isn't. This is me just listening to this for the first time.
So you've never experienced any offensive behavior from any other color? Or
no, sir.
Wow. But you are blessed.
But you see what's going on, even in your city.
Newark. Damn, nigga, even the white man. What a...
But did you like what his response to the white man? No, sir.
Yeah.
White man, stop it! Stop it!
Like, black people, if you're gonna say sir, please enunciate the R. I hate sir. I fucking, the S-U-H fucking kills me, man.
So, Negro, you've never experienced racism? Nah, sir.
No, sir. Even though it is probable that I may be richer than you, and I still call you sir. All right. Now this is another black man with a huge face and a pink necktie and shirt. That nigga's face is big. That nigga got a lot of face.
It does. I don't know who that is, though.
They look like a fucking statue, man. Looks like that, Easter Island. His old Easter Island ass nigga. All right, here we go.
In Sterling.
Yeah.
During Katrina, the officers that killed those and ended up in jail. So, I know you say you're not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But you see some of the things that
what's going on.
Right. Yeah.
As far as no opinion on what's going on, I mean, of course, we all want somebody to figure out what's going on first and then put a stop to it, or try to put a stop to it. Everybody come together and figure something out, and maybe just coming together is the solution. But we'd have to do that first. And obviously we have a bunch of differences, people feeling this way, people feeling that way. When you come to a person like me, my answer is always the same, man. My politics, my flag, my country, my nation, my world, all that is Reginae, Cameron, Neil and his brother, Tony. That's it. That's my...
Are those just people he knows from the neighborhood? Did he just name some niggas from the block? God damn. Niggas is niggas. That's some black shit. Like, what? My nationality? My nation? My politics is, you know... It's nigga. Like, and that's all right.
That's my nation. That's my flag. That's my world. That's my protest. That's my don't protest. That's my everything. That's all that matters. Those four kids to me.
Oh, those
are his kids.
His kids. Okay, so he just said my family and my family dog.
So go one level deeper with me. I remember one time I saw you after you had done a concert. I think it was in Westchester. Different kind of neighborhood, but I asked you what the racial breakdown was of your audience. Do you remember this? And you told me the only black face you could see in the whole audience was your makeup artist. I believe that's what you said, and she was in the front row, right? A lot of white kids love rap.
Yes.
Explain that. What does that say to you? What's the message
that
of
the
it?
Shit
What's
funky.
The bigger picture of it?
I don't want to answer these damn questions. I just want to go see what's going on with this shit. I thought that was clearly a message that there was no such thing as racism. That's what I thought that was.
Okay.
But that was a perfect example. When I look out and I come up off the stage, when I'm coming out the bottom of the stage of my show, when I'm on tour, and I'm in my stance or whatever, and I open my eyes, and I see everybody. This type of crowd, that type of...
And again, I've been coming down on niggas. I understand why you listening to this are annoyed and why you're in my news feed saying, I hate Lil Wayne, but also your experience is not Lil Wayne's experience. Like, for the past 2 decades, you have not been on stage across the planet. Hell, really, for you, the biggest stage you've been on was you making a post that got over 5 shares. And I don't begrudge you for that, because you might not have, like, the sort of unearned advantage, if you will, to where more people might pay attention to you. And you can see why he's ignorant. Like, he's merely chasing a way to pay those bills and take care of those children. Huh. A black man that works hard and takes care of his kids. All right, continuing.
Crowd has always been everybody, thank God. And that's all I can answer for. So,
do you think the younger generation...
Yeah, for me, I just think that, like, you know, Phoenix Collader, she likes making bagels. And I hide the salt because her salt intake is a little too much. And she put some garlic... powder on them their bagels with some butter and she liked them just fine. She ate them right on down, didn't you, woman?
I'm gonna get more salt.
You gonna get more salt, and I'm just gonna throw it out. So we're gonna have an annual salt budget that will look like all right, Lil Wayne. Black dude with the big face about to ask him a question.
The millennials. Do you think they're moving a little further away from the racism as opposed to where it used to be?
It's not cool to them.
Right.
It's not cool to them. It don't matter to them. And when something is not, it's so not cool that it doesn't even matter to them. You know, they're like, what? You know, they're like, what happened? And that's their response. That's the millennials' response.
Could it be that you're a musician and... Obviously, as an ex-professional athlete or as an entertainer.
Just making sure I didn't accidentally pause it. Okay, the recording's still going. Yeah, again, I see Big Face Man is trying to get Wayne to understand. I don't think Wayne is going to understand this. That nigga likes work, and he likes cough syrup. That's his focus. So, again, I think... And I wonder if it's intentional that they get somebody as inarticulate and as who doesn't read and think like get Dr. Annalise Fonza on there, right? Almost the same time as Lil Wayne. He was on Big L's album in 95, and I think he was on Biggie.
Talib Kweli.
Yeah, like get there's other rappers. I think there is intent with going with Lil Wayne. because they want this segment. And they also don't want the segment to be a little too radical, because if you get stick one from Dead Prez, that nigga is a fucking black vegan socialist. Like, you go ahead and try get him. I think they'd rather have Wayne.
They should have Boots Riley. He's not a rapper, but Boots Riley. Yeah, I love
Wayne from the coup.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably not a rapper now, but yeah, them niggas rapped. I remember them niggas from the 90s.
Yeah, they're still around. And he actually, I'll have to find the clip of it, he basically fucked up one of Bill Maher's shows and everybody just ended up laughing at him. Because he was like...
Laughing at Bill or Boots?
At Boots.
Oh, because they didn't like him? Or?
Yeah, because they were like, oh, you're like, that's a crazy conspiracy. Because he was like, but we went to Iraq. Like, he was literally like, because it was a business opportunity and people just want to control oil and control resources and kill a bunch of troops. And like, you know, the way he laid it out, they were like, oh, that's crazy conspiracy theory. It's not just about business. Like, you know.
It's not just about business.
Yeah. Bill Maher got kind of pissed at him.
He would.
He would.
I like that. I think I should do that. I think that I should totally change everything I'm doing, and I need to be rapping about rims, bitches, and hoes, and doing the dab, and I need to just do that for like 3 years, get on one of those shows, and then talk the real shit.
Like... Let me tell you about white supremacy, patriarchy, and why capitalism is not feasible.
Yeah, and then that night that show is live, I need you on my YouTube channel to wait and then drop the album where I'm kicking all the real shit on that YouTube channel with the PayPal link, so that everybody's searching the name on Google that day that I get kicked off that show, and they're like, oh, look at this shit that just landed on YouTube 5 minutes ago. And yeah.
Yeah, then we need to keep the PayPal link up so I can pay for your funeral after you get shot in the face for embarrassing a bunch of white people on national television.
Yeah, I'm gonna need some niggas with heat around me. I believe I've seen some pictures of Ricky online. I believe he has access to firearms.
I believe he has access to firearms.
Oh shit, it's almost time for you to go to work, and this segment has 4 minutes left.
Do you think they treat you differently? Although you are black, you are a prominent figure in the black community. Could that be?
That's why I said I'm sure it may be because of my blessing.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why my path has been different.
This nigga does not understand Wayne's vernacular. Like, yeah. Everything good is blessings. Everything bad is curses. Like, you gotta understand, Wayne is an old country nigga. Yes, he's my age. Yes, he's 33. But he is an 85-year-old country nigga from church and Jesus and cornbread. Like, stop asking him these questions about this shit. Wayne is gonna smack you with a fucking Bible in a second here.
Right.
But I'm be first one to say I'm sure that it has a lot to do with it, right. But it also is the person that I am. I believe strongly that it's the person that I am.
You treat people a certain
way. Exactly.
Shannon, how do you feel about what Wayne is saying?
Well,
a man can really only speak to his experience. Mm-hmm. And as I alluded to, I come from rural South Georgia. I've experienced things. I've been called things. And sometimes you can only see things through the eyes of the man that have cried. So if this man hasn't experienced racism, haven't been called out of his name, he's doing right by not saying and trying to make up a story. Mm-hmm. So did you hear what Lil Wayne said? He experienced the same thing. I commend him. Although he's from New Orleans, the ward. What ward are you from? 17th ward. We know what it's like in New Orleans. Although he has never experienced that, he's not going to sit up here on national television and try to embellish in order to further advance the conversation. Because then people are going to say, see,
you know, there's a little way.
Not only is an athlete.
I wonder if part of the things, just because he is ignorant and a lack of maybe like formal education, specifically dealing with things, you know, intertwining capitalism and race and social events and things like that. Because does he not understand that the living conditions of black people in New Orleans exist because of racism?
Oh, probably not.
Like, I'm actually thinking about that. Like, so when he says, oh, I didn't experience racism, because so many people think racism is like, a white man came up to me and called me a nigger and punched me in the face. Like, yes, that's racism. But it's also racism when they intentionally leave you in a certain district, deny jobs, opportunity, and money in that district, and keep people systemically impoverished. And that's also racism, right? But you're not getting called a nigger. You're not, you know.
Nah, because you're only around black people. Like, you're so well segregated. That's why you weren't called a nigger, because you didn't see anybody white until you went on tour.
Right, exactly. And it's like, yeah, there weren't people in your neighborhood coming there to call you a nigger. But at the same time, you couldn't get out because of racism. They set that up and left you there. So maybe he just doesn't understand that as a concept. I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah, but see, blessings.
Blessings.
Jesus.
Entertainer, a musician, a very prominent figure who's also experienced. So I commend him. If he's never, kudos to you, bro, in 33 years. I'm 48 years old from rural South Georgia. And if you don't think it's alive and well, Wayne, check my timeline. Check my timeline when Skip and I had a discussion last year. They still would use the N-word. They would still
call him Wayne, look at
with the ring around his tail. Hey, do you? That makes you feel better? I think it says a lot more about you.
That reminds me, it's like, he is from the 17th Ward, 17th character. And he's looking like, you kind of, I don't really like the way you're raising your voice at me right now, dog. I hope you understand that my nigga Big Red in the back with the shotgun right now, dog.
Than me? But I'm cool with it. It's not going to stop me from doing what I do.
Shannon, does it give you any?
He's annoyed. They're both annoyed with. They are both very politely annoyed with each other right now.
Yeah, and then let's just check the patriarchy. This is the second time Skip Bayless tried to pass the microphone to Shannon, but Mr. Big Face had to jump in ahead of her. You know, it's like she tried to acknowledge her before to get her to talk. This is the first time the woman going to talk
That is Shannon. Shannon's that dude.
Oh, that's his name?
That's his name. That's Shannon Sharp. He's an ex-NFL player.
Oh, excuse my gender binary thinking when it comes to names. So we'll just let these last 30 seconds play. Miss Phoenix Kalita got to go to work. She has 11 minutes.
What he's saying about his more generation, the millennial generation.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that racism, bigotry is a learned, taught emotion. So if you do not teach someone to do that, they won't extend that. So it's got to stop somewhere. But you have to understand it's been going on for such a long, long period of time. You have 400 plus years of this in the U.S. People have been fighting back in biblical times. It was divided up. And so, like I said, Wayne, I commend you. I'm glad you're speaking. You're not embellishing a story. Being from New Orleans, experiencing what you've been able to experience, I remember reading where you say you accidentally shot yourself, but racism is real. He knows it's real, although he hasn't experienced it.
With that said, that night, that day,
yeah,
that I shot myself, the police, I was the only person in the house.
Right.
The police came through there, they knocked the doors down. I was on the floor.
Right.
They jumped over, they all hopped over looking for the drugs and looking for this and that. It was a white police that came, ran up there and stopped and said, what are y'all doing? Do y'all not see this baby on the floor? And they said, we called the ambulance. I say, ambulance, he has a hole in his chest. He picked me up, he brought me to the hospital himself. He was white.
Ugh, I don't do that.
Hey. So I get it, like the one white cop was nice to you and that's gonna alter your perception, but at the same time you're saying they came in, you were laying on the floor, they called the ambulance, they were all looking for drugs. So okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, because I mean the black cops work for the same white supremacist institution, WineCellarMedia.com.